on to Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We are brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. And as always, we are talking with business professionals about ways that they are creating success in their life and their business by stepping outside of some of the conventional norms and creating uniqueness in the environment. And today, we're going to take a subject that I think is somewhat very much inside a conventional norm, very much done wrong in many cases, and we're going to learn some ways that you can make it an effective tool. And the topic that we're going to talk about today is referrals. And I know that a lot of people out there will tell you they build their business by referrals, but we're just not seeing the evidence of that sometimes. And my guest today, Steve Beecham, is going to tell us a little bit about how he does it, and we're going to talk about it from a standpoint of backwards business. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we've also got Dan Merkel with us, and Dan is going to chime in, I believe, with some examples of how he's been able to effectively use some of these strategies on referrals to build success inside of his own business. So, Dan, welcome as well.
Thank you.
All right. So let's start with backwards business. I mean,
Bass-ackwards.
Exactly. I can't even say it right, even though I came up in the South, so I should know this term pretty well. My father used to tell me I was doing things bass-ackwards all the time, so I should be pretty familiar with the term. But for those that aren't, Steve, what does that mean, bass-ackwards business?
Well, it basically means that it's opposite of pretty much what you've been taught. You know, the normal sales training process is one in which you kind of decide to go out and you cold call. You're just not, people say you need to see more prospects, and you develop an A list and a B list, and you develop a sales funnel. And, you know, if I talk to 100 people, then hopefully 10 of them will give me an appointment, and then maybe one of them I'll be able to sell.
Yeah, sales is a numbers game.
It's a numbers game. Right, and so what I've tried to do is flip that over and say, how can that be fun, first of all? And what I found in the process was not only a fun way to do it, but a lot better way, because what happens is that I try not to sell anybody anything. What I want is people to buy from me. So the whole process is set up for people to purchase from you instead of you to go out and try to sell them whatever it is you have to sell.
Yeah, which, let's be clear about that. I mean, people want to buy products and services. I've yet to meet anybody that says, no, I don't want to buy anything. Everything I do myself. I need nothing from you.
Right.
I just yet to meet that guy, right?
Right.
But people hate the idea of being sold to.
Correct. So what I've learned is a whole process that I went through. And one of the first things that I learned was what we don't do as salespeople. We think that if we're talking, we're mostly extroverts. So we think if we're talking to somebody and they're listening to us and looking at us, we think that they're having a good time. And what I found out is most people are just being respectful and allowing you to do what you do.
In fact, they're waiting for you to shut up so they can talk.
So what I discovered was, what happens if you get in any conversation and you proceed to make the conversation really only about the other person? Wonder if I call that having a deeper conversation. So what I started realizing was that all the great conversations that I had where I felt good about the conversation were really conversations where the other person made it about me. So, like, an instance would be my grandmother. She would call me and say, how are you doing? How are you doing in school? Do you need any money? You know, it's all about me. I never asked her anything about how she was doing.
You know, I think as business people, if we ask everybody we met, do you need any money, I think we'd have buy-in 100% across the board, right?
Your sales funnel would be full. But that's precisely what I try to do. So what I do is, when I meet another person, is I want to learn as much about them as I can. I want to not only learn about them professionally, I want to learn about them personally.
Steve, how do you do that and not sound disingenuous?
Well, you can't. You have to be serious about it. You have to be really wanting to know more about the other person. And so I would say, you know, so Andy, tell me about what you do. And then you would say, well, I do so-and-so. And then I would take that and try to figure out, what's the next thing I can ask you about what you do? I want to drive it down. And it gets to really the basic principle of what I've learned is that I'm trying to get you to paint me a picture of what it is you do, so that when I leave you and I go back out and I run into somebody else and they're having a problem, I then see that picture that I got you to create for me. Then I can come back to you and say, Andy, I've got a referral for you, or I can tell the other person, you need to meet my friend Andy. So my whole purpose of a deeper conversation with a person is to find out as much as I can about what they do, how they do it, find out as much as I can about their family. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to know what their best referral would be, but I'm also trying to see if I can discover any pain in their life.
So as you're doing this, I mean, obviously this is a little bit, you know, non-conventional in the sense that we're getting away from cold calling and some of that type of thing. But yet, we've heard a lot of people talk about referral marketing and talk about, hey, go in and make the conversation about the other person. Clearly, some mistakes are made. What are some of the common mistakes that people make trying to employ this type of business building?
They're still going into the conversation with the thought process of eventually I'm going to tell them what it is I'm trying to sell them. You know, they'll say, find the customer's pain, but you're only trying to discover the pain from the standpoint of how can I sell around that? How can I answer that pain? And what I'm saying, that's all BS. I want to go in and I want to talk to somebody, and I don't care if they ever ask me anything about what I do. I don't care if my only purpose is to figure out how I can help them. If that just so happens that it's me, then that's just a home run. But it may be somebody else, and I may need to refer them to somebody else that's in a similar line of work as mine, or somebody that's maybe a competitor of mine. So if you go into every conversation really trying to get to know that person better, then amazing things happen. It's kind of like, you know, the first time, you know, like if you were in college and you went to a bar and you saw a cute girl at the bar, you couldn't walk up to that girl and say, hey, I'm Steve Beauchamp. I'm the greatest speaker in the world. I make a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. Well, she's not going to give you any time or attention. But that's what we do as salespeople. We walk in and say, I've got the best rates. I've got the best closing costs if we're in the mortgage business. We walk in and say, I've got the cheapest insurance, or I get the best returns for people on the stock. What we really need to do is walk in like we would if we saw a cute girl and say, hi, my name's Steve. What's your name? My name's Jane. Well, where are you from, Jane? What's your major in school? Blah, blah, blah. And you really have to get to know Jane, and then Jane sits there and listens to you, and the conversation's all about Jane. Well, after a while, then Jane feels kind of bad that she hasn't asked you any questions, and then she says to you, well, tell me about you. And then that's your opportunity to explain to them what it is that you do. In other words, paint them a picture of what it is you're looking for. And if it's them, then they buy from you. If it's not, then they refer you to somebody they think's a better customer for you.
All right, I got a question in that I want to come back to. But before I do, let's look at it from this angle. So I go in and I have this conversation, and I find out what a perfect referral is for you. But we see the conversation often end there. Where's the mistake that people make, or maybe it's not even a mistake, it's just not being prepared with the proper network of your own, but it seems that help doesn't often get followed up on. I tell somebody, they engage me, you come to me, and I tell you who my perfect referral is, and yet I never hear from you again.
Right, because that person asked you that, and you told them that, but they really don't care about you. All they care about is where their next sale is, and that's what's bass-ackward about mine. I could care less where my next sale comes from. All I'm concerned about is you told me you had a pain, and I'm going to go help you with that pain. That pain might be that you can't figure out which bike to buy for a triathlon. You know, there's $2,000 bikes and there's $8,000 bikes. If I can hook you up with a friend of mine that's been in triathlons and knows about bicycles, and he can help you make that decision, then what happens is I've taken your pain and I've hooked you up with somebody else that I see, somebody else that I know that sees that as his pleasure. So what happens is I'm looking for people's pains and people's pleasures in every conversation, so that I know that if I leave here today and I know your pains and your pleasures, when I run into somebody else, I might send you somebody that you can help with your pleasure, but I might send you somebody that can help you with your pain. And so real quick, what happens is when I actually do that, then what it creates a wow within you. You go, wow, man, he sent me a great referral. He sent me exactly what I was looking for. And then when I create that wow within you, it makes you want to reciprocate. And that's where the referral comes from.
Yeah, so what are some of the things that are important if I'm going to make sure that I follow up on that end correctly? I've talked to someone, I've listened, I've got their need, their pain or their pleasure, their ideal referral, you know. What do I need to make sure I do on my end to follow up with that?
Just do it. I mean, You need to be as clear as you can with the other person. A guy called me yesterday, and he's looking for a job. Okay, so what I had to do was spend 30 minutes on the phone really trying to get him to tell me what kind of job he was looking for. He really didn't know. So I kind of had to be the person to run him through that process. You want an hourly job? You want a commission job? You want a job in a restaurant? You want a job in an office? Yes, no, no. And it took me 30 minutes to kind of break it down to really what he needed was kind of a waiter's job at a nice restaurant because he needed flexible hours. He needed to be home during the day, and that way he could work in the evening. That way he could make some commission, and so he could get some pretty high income, blah, blah, blah. So now, for the last 2 days, I'm going around asking everybody I know in my village or my sphere of influence who they know that owns a restaurant that maybe I can introduce my friend to. So what happens is I take this friend of mine's pain, and I use it as a way to go meet other people. Because I might call you and say, Andy, you know anybody that owns a restaurant that I've got this friend that would like to be a waiter? And I go through the process with you of what this person has told me they're looking for, and you say, yeah, call my friend Joe. So I call Joe, or you introduce me to Joe by email or phone, and I talk to Joe, and I say, I've got this friend that's looking for this, blah, blah, blah. Does this sound like somebody you'd like to meet? Yes, I'd love to talk to him. Tell him to come by. Now I get to call my friend back and say, okay, I met this guy. He wants to talk to you. Oh, man, thank you. Wow. Who else has done that for him today? So what happens is I've created this wow within him. Well, now I have to believe that if any time he hears about an opportunity for somebody needs a speaker for their sales meeting, I'm going to be the first guy he thinks about because nobody else took the time to do that.
Now, you mentioned a great point that I want to circle back to here, and that's this idea that you didn't know anybody right off, and you used it as a tool to meet other people, because I think this is where we've seen this breakdown before. Somebody says, I'm looking for X, and you go, well, I don't know X. And it just drops right there. It never seems to go any further. But you're saying actually use it as a tool to go expand your own network. And I'm going to coin a phrase that I believe you use, which is you call it becoming the mayor of your village.
Right. So what, you know, Joe Girard, the world's greatest car salesman, says he found out that everybody knows 200 people. And so he said that if I can get my 200 people to introduce me to their 200 people, then that's all the customers I'll ever need to sell cars. And so I use that same theory. And basically, if I really take the time to know my 200 and know what makes them tick and know how I can help them, and I stay in contact with them all the time, they're not going to call me. I have to be the person to call them. Uncle Joe, how are you doing? I haven't talked to you in a while. How's the building business? Oh, it's terrible right now. What can we do about that, Uncle Joe? I don't know. Get me a customer. All right, I'll go try to find you a customer. I'll start calling and trying to find Uncle Joe a customer. But if I don't, I use that. If I don't know somebody right off the bat, then I'll call my friend Dan. Say, Dan, I'm trying to find my Uncle Joe. He's a custom home builder. He needs a customer. You don't happen to know anybody that's been talking about wanting to build a house recently, do you? And he'll say no. And then I'll call my friend Andy. Hey, Andy, you don't happen to know. So what it does, it gives me an excuse to call you and stay in touch with you, and then at the same time find out how you're doing. So it becomes this big spider web of interaction going on, and it's all on the behalf of other people. And so people get that at the end of the day, and it took me a while to believe that, but I'm living testament that people will help you if you help them first.
Right. Well, let's talk about living testament. And while it's great to hear your experience of it, you know how it is. You always hear the best pitch from the guy who's selling it, right? So let's go to Dan. I mean, Dan, you've been able to take some of this and put it into your own personal experiences. Maybe you can share what have you gone through and maybe some success that you've seen from it.
Well, it goes back to when Steve first started to write the book, and he was sharing some of his ideas with me on the pay it forward mentality, and a lot of what he just described to you here, and a point that I had to really grasp early on was one that you guys touched on a minute ago when you talk about sincerity. Now, it's kind of a running joke that I've got an uncle that was a famous mediocre salesman, and I mean really mediocre, and his favorite line was, once you learn to fake sincerity, the rest of it's easy. But in this program, if you would call it that, there is no faking sincerity. If you can't go out there on a daily basis and truly care and truly grasp this concept, it doesn't work. I've literally watched guys that have talked to Steve and tried to embrace some of his ideas. I've seen them in action, and they'll start out, using the philosophy of I'll find out more about the other person, and they can't get past the free lunch with a sales pitch for dessert. So they start out in the right direction, but then all of a sudden they go, hey, I got to get my plug in here. I got to find out if there's a way I can get a sale out of this. So,
yeah, I find the unique spot on that is Steve was talking about, you know, you ask about the other person, and at some point she wants to know about you, I think was the example you were given, you know, with the girl you met at college or whatever. But what do you do when she doesn't, right? Because that happens a lot where you get the person who just, they're willing to talk and tell you all about them.
It's fine.
But they never come back. But you have to be emotionally and mentally prepared for that outcome, correct?
Yeah, but we don't care.
That's what I mean. But yeah, I'll still continue
to help her if she never helps me.
But in Dan's comment, what he's talking about, the guy, the mediocre sales guy, he was faking the sincerity, so he didn't care. How do you adapt that new mindset? Because that's what we're talking about here. This is a shift in thinking.
Right.
How do you make that shift in thinking, Dan? And in fact, Dan, did you have to make a shift in thinking to bring this to reality?
Well, it wasn't so much a shift in thinking as it was an awakening to what I already had. You know, I grew up in an environment where helping others was a given, whether it was my high school and even through my college years, and giving back was always part of it. I don't struggle with giving back term, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it was just a matter of tapping into what was already there. There are people that can't do this. They need to go get a desk job and process orders or do something because their sincerity isn't there. They're tainted for some whatever reason through life. We all know the guy that's kind of pissed off at somebody all the time, and it just doesn't work. But going back to your scenario on triathlons, Andy, to me this was similar to the day that I woke up at age of 45 and said, I'm getting tired of being fat, lumpy, and tired. So I took it upon myself to engage in an exercise routine on a regular basis, knowing in the mindset where I was going with it. So as you said, mine wasn't a five-hour ride, but it was an hour of P90X in the morning, and I didn't want to get out of bed. But I knew dang well that that piece, in conjunction with the piece that's going to come tomorrow and the piece on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, and we get to rest on Sunday, and then start over on Monday, and then you look in the mirror and say, boy, I'm not making much progress, but I got to keep my head down and keep the faith. And the progress came, and then I shed a bunch of weight, and my life changed because of that. That's the same philosophy you almost have to use with what Steve's talking about. You got to understand that this is a daily exercise, and the outcome comes down the road. I've been in scenarios where I've tried to help people out like Steve talks about, and a day later he's calling me up saying, hey, I got a buddy who's got a problem with his insurance agent. And as Steve says, there's people I've been working with for years that they don't get it, but you know what? That's okay, because you kind of crack a smile and say, you know, I'm not just out there to help those that are going to help me anyways. And people question it. I mean, I've had people go, yeah, well, at the end of the day, you're just being nice to get something back. Well, as I mentioned in Steve's book, and it's a line that I thought about when Steve first started putting it together, his publisher called and interviewed me, and he said, how do you break it down? What's the quickest way, your elevator speech, to describe this process? And I thought about it a minute, and I said, you know what? It's the equivalent to walking down Main Street every morning, and you got a choice. Do you want to go tap everybody you see on the shoulder and say, hey, can I have $20? Can you give me a $20 bill? Or do you want to walk down the street and hand out $20 bills? What's going to make you feel better by the time you get to the end of the block? If you're asking for $20 from somebody, you're not going to make it to the end of the block. Because just like in my previous years in sales, I'm going to find a door to jump in halfway down the street because I don't want to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's no fun. I was able to be successful in business the old-fashioned way, but I wasn't happy. So how you can use the term successful and unhappy at the same time just kind of blew me away. And fortunately, when Steve brought me into this program, as I keep calling it, it was at a time in my life where I needed that change, and it's been amazing.
Well, let's talk about this. I mean, thinking about a shift in mindset, but dealing with reality, because what you mentioned was spot on. This is not an overnight thing. You know, it could happen something very quickly, sure, but this is something you do for a long-term change in the way you're doing business, correct?
Right.
But we see so many people out there in business that they're desperate. They're starving now, and they only eat what they kill. So, you know, it's kind of like, how do you make the shift?
We turbocharge it for them.
Okay. Talk about that.
So what we do is we sit down. I do these workshops for companies, and we sit down and we take we get them to create their list of 200. And these are people that know you and you know them. When you call them on the phone, they say, I say, hey, Andy, and you say, hey, Steve. This is not your doctor that did your gallbladder surgery and you know his name and he doesn't have a clue who you are. So we build that list. And while we're building that list, what I do is I'll say, write down everybody in your family. So people will start writing down their people in their family. And I'll say, don't forget your aunt. Don't forget your uncle. Don't forget your cousin. Don't forget your grandparents. Don't forget somebody in your family's in the military. So each one of those is a picture, and it helps them. And I tell them in advance, while we're doing this, I'm going to paint pictures for you, and you will see how, as I paint a picture, it'll help you remember a person's name. So we go through a whole exercise of painting pictures of people you went to school with, people you used to work with, who do you know is a professional, who do you know that's a real estate agent or a financial guy, blah, 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 and they come up with this list of 100 to 200 people. Then I get them to take that list, and if let's just, for ease, let's say they have 90 people on their list. I say, take three of those people and put them on every day of the week for the next 30 days. So what I want you to do every day is to contact those three people and figure out how you can help them. Now, if you're calling them, if you can think in your mind that you're only calling them from the standpoint that you want to help them, not sell them anything, not tell them anything, just strictly help them or check in with them and see how they're doing as a good friend would, then you'll have no problem making the phone call. And then once you talk to that person, decide, when do I want to talk to Andy again? Well, I want to talk to him next week, next month, 6 months, next year. But you have to talk to him again with it, at least within a year. So after I talk to make that call tomorrow to Andy and I've talked to him and maybe I did or didn't find out anything that I can help him with, I then move him off to when I want to talk to him again, and now I forget about him until that shows up again. But if you take everybody you know and you compress it into the next 30 days, you'll get to paint a lot of pictures for people. So people will say, you know, so I'll say, Andy, how you doing, blah, 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 and I have this long conversation. Eventually, about 75% of the time, since it's all been about you, you'll say, well, Steve, how are you doing? And I'll say, Andy, I'm doing great because right now I'm transitioning from the mortgage business into the speaking business, and I'm doing these workshops, and I'm really trying to get in with a company like, you know, a big company like maybe Cox or Orkin or Rollins because they have salespeople, and I'd really like to teach them how to get more referral business. You know, if you know anybody there, I would really love to talk to them. Well, if you don't, you don't. If you do, you do. You say, well, you know, my next-door neighbor's wife works for Rollins. Well, I'd love to introduce her, and then you'll probably introduce me to her. But if you don't, I've at least painted that picture to you so that if you're ever out and about until the time I talk to you next time, if you run into somebody and they say Orkins or Rollins or Cox, then you probably will remember that because nobody else has painted it to you that way. And so every time I call somebody, I'm using that same pretty much spiel, but I'm going to change the picture based upon what I think that person might see. So I might call a 20-year-old nephew, and the pictures I paint for him are going to be entirely different than, say, my uncle who's 70 years old. The pictures I paint for him are going to be different. I may know where he's worked and blah, 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 and I'll paint pictures for him. So I get people to think about putting these people in your calendar, which then comes across to your, when you download it, comes onto your phone. So every day on the way to work or on the way home or on the way to lunch, on the way back from lunch or during the day when you have some time, check in with your two or three people. And what happens is all of a sudden the magic occurs and all these people start now knowing exactly what you're looking for. And that's how you get it going quickly.
Did you do the turbocharged approach, Dan, or did you take a little slower approach to getting this process going?
No, fortunately, at that time, like I said, I'd been successful building a book of business the old-fashioned way with 100 phone calls, 10 appointments, and sell one. And so I was fortunate to be in that spot. And I know exactly where you're coming from, and I know a lot of these guys that Steve's talking to. The old days, we used to call it hunting and farming. And so, you know, you could get some of the old school guys to buy into some of that, that, look, I'm going to spend some time networking and building for the future and planting the seeds as you would in farming, but I got to go out and slay me a big old goat or something, or my family's not going to eat. So I was fortunate that I didn't need to hunt, and I could just farm for a while.
All right, so I'm going to put you guys on the spot here, and you can certainly refuse, but I'm just curious for our listeners to really get a picture of this. can you guys role play a conversation, like what it would sound like if you guys were meeting at a networking event for the first time, so we could really hear a couple of the questions that would get to how do you discover someone's pain?
Let's go a little different way, because what I would say is, I mean, you got to first start off with the people you already know, so it wouldn't be like it was cold. But we'll do it with you.
Oh, good. Okay. I get to role play. I was trying to get out of the role play.
No, I want to role play with you, because you and I haven't had a chance to have a deep conversation. So,
all right, fantastic. Let's
go for it. So Andy, tell me about what it is that really you want to do more of. I mean, I know you're doing the radio show and you're doing some other stuff, but what's the thing that really is kind of the breadwinner for you, or what you really want to do more of?
You know, the thing that really just turns the wheels for me is helping people increase their performance by changing the way they think. You know, most of the people I see in my world of coaching and consulting, they're behavior specialists. They want to change what you do. But if you don't get down and look at how people think, which is kind of what we're all about here at Renegade Radio, breaking those rules of conventional thinking. If you don't get down to the root of how people think, you don't create lasting change.
Who's a good prospect for you, or who's somebody that you need to meet, or you know, if I run into somebody out there and I'm talking to them, you know, and say I'm speaking to a group at an insurance company or a financial planning company, are those the kind of people that might be customers for you, or is it company or private? Or
you know, companies and private are both good, but I'll tell you what I found to be the true fit like a glove, and that's when you see somebody that is either in the process of making or on the verge of making some type of true life change. And you know, Dan, for example, you mentioned kind of that point where you decided to take up P90X because you'd just gotten tired of being fat and lazy, right? You know, if I see somebody at that point of change, that's when they really need somebody to come in and provide that counsel and provide that motivation and help them stay focused on that mindset. Because, you know, we talked about the triathlon beforehand.
So what kind of changes would I need to look for? What would somebody tell me? Would it be moving from a company or deciding to lose weight? Or
it could be any of those things. It could be that, you know, they're taking on a new role or responsibility in their organization. It could be that they've left corporate and they're ready to start their own business. But it's somebody who is still at a passion point in their life, not somebody who's at a desperation point. When I get somebody that, you know, the doors are all but closed, that's not a good fit for me.
So I don't understand that passion point. What do you mean?
Somebody where there's still hope. There's still a brightness of the future. They still have a belief that, you know, like if you're going on a diet and you've already given up that, hey, I've tried 16 different diets and I hadn't lost a pound, you're defeated. And I'm not there to help people that are defeated feel undefeated.
Individuals are your best customers then?
The individual can be, but you have the same thing going on inside of organizations. When an organization decides to make change, mm-hmm. right? There's a people side to that. And while the organization has a strategy change, the people themselves, they have a human and emotional reaction mm-hmm. to that change that has nothing to do with the goals and priorities of the organization, but it's the same principle. You want your organization to change and go with you in this new strategy direction, you better understand how they think and feel about what's going
on. So I have this major corporation that is going through a lot of change. And they have a lot of salespeople, and the salespeople all work independently. They don't all like work within the company walls. And they're there's a lot of I don't know what would the thought process be. Just people that are just not happy with the change. They're unhappy. Of course, they've also been through this what I call a depression, where their income's been down a little bit, and then there's some corporate changes going on that aren't beneficial to them. So a lot of the sales guys are not very happy. So I think that, you know, like I think that might be a good fit. So can you scale that for a company like that to help them get some change out to the individual sales guys, or do you have to work with the sales guys one-on-one?
Now you can get something to scale like that. I mean, change starts at the top. I mean, sometimes it's just changing the perspective of the way management is communicating the change. And when change comes down to the pipe, if communication is clear and people understand what's going on and why, that has a lot different effect than when change is just being forced upon people and they don't understand it.
So when I'm going to call this friend of mine and try to introduce you to her. So what would I tell her how can I tell her that? What are some of the ideas of some things that might be generic in nature to kind of whet her appetite when I talk to her about, hey, you need to meet my friend Andy because I know you're going through all this change and you got a lot of unhappy campers in your, you know, in your campground. So, what are some of the things that she might say? Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Well, pretty much what you had just defined. I mean, you're going to do the same thing with her that you've done with me. You're going to talk to her about what's going on, except instead of it being about what she does, it's going to be about where those pain points are. And the minute she tells you that she's got pain in the area.
I mean, I already know
that. That's what I'm saying. So you know that she's got pain in the area of change. Then it's just, hey, I got a guy who specializes in that. I got a guy who deals with the human side of business process change inside of an organization, and I think it'd be worth your time to sit down and find out if it's a good fit.
All right, so I'm going to introduce you to a really, really, really good customer on that, okay? And then I've got another friend of mine that's been a corporate guy, and now he's going into business for himself. And so he's a little concerned about, you know, but I think his change in his mind is a little bit more about, am I going to be able to handle this as a self-employed guy and what things I need to think about? Would he be a good customer for you?
Absolutely. And the parallel I draw with him is say, hey, listen, I know you've got some question and some, you know, some doubt in your mind about what you're facing. You know, I got a guy who has completed an Ironman triathlon, and he's gone through the same process in business, not only through business, but physically. And he can relate the experience and show you that anything's possible if you control how you think about it.
Sweet. All right. So I've got two great people I'm going to introduce you to.
You know, that's the first time, Dan, I've been interviewed on my own radio show.
Okay, but do you see what I did?
I do, and it was beautifully done.
I got you to paint me a picture.
And now, you know what I want to do now? Now I want to figure out how to help you.
That's
right?
The magic.
I'm extremely motivated now. I want to figure out how to help Steve.
I got to say something, Andy. I've been around Steve for about 20 years. I knew it was going to eventually go that way.
Right.
There was no way we were getting out of here without him turning the table, and that's awesome.
No, that's exactly why I wanted to role play through it, because I wanted people listening to really experience how that happens. Because
now,
was
what
genuine.
I'm saying to you is, I'm serious as a heart attack.
I know you are really
good customers.
I know you are. That's what I'm saying. This is genuine. This is not, you know, something we sat down and run a script to. And
so
that's
what happens,
makes it magical.
What happens if I do that 3 or 4 or 5 times a day? Then I've got 3 or 4 or 5 Andys out there trying to figure out how they can help me, or when they get the opportunity, they want to help me. I'm not asking them to. I'm not forcing them to, but it's just nature. It's human nature. It's just bizarre that
it
took us so long to figure this out.
Yeah. It's that pay it forward.
But
why don't we figure it out, Steve? I mean, what tends to get in our way? Why are people screwing this up?
All we think about is us.
Why do you think that is? I mean, what's the root of that? Any idea?
Yeah, it's called self-preservation. I mean, it goes back as far as the time of man. I got to get mine before I can think about helping somebody else out with theirs. So I got to fill my cupboards, and I got to feed my family. Then I'll worry about if I got enough left over to help out Steve.
Ah, that's beautiful. I was hoping you'd bring that up, because that's my theory on it. You know, I talked about this idea of mindset, and mindset being rooting from belief systems and conditioning, and we're conditioned to self-preserve, aren't we? I mean, the first example that pops to mind is on the airplane. They tell you, you know, secure your own mask and then help those around you, right?
But it's what I'm finding is when I talk to people about this, and you got some guy that's having to hammer out phone calls. You got some guy's a young stockbroker, and they say, you need to make 100 cold calls a day. And I come in and I say, don't quit making your 100 cold calls a day. But make 90 cold calls a day, and then make 10 warm calls a day. Call the people that you already know, but don't sell them. Just find out how you can help them, and if they ask you, tell them how they can help you. But don't ask them to come bring their stocks with you. Never sell to your friends. But your friends need to be really good at knowing exactly what you're looking for, so that if they see it, and if they have a trust factor with you, they will introduce you to that person.
Yeah, and that's a great point, too, knowing what they are looking for, because a connection that isn't relevant is a waste of time.
Right.
Well, Andy, also, when you do this, and the guy that I went and met the other day, who Steve introduced me to, and we just sat and talked about what's going on in our worlds, at the end of the day, his pain was he needed a contractor to come finish his basement. So when this whole conversation was done, I hooked him up with a guy to come finish his basement. Now, he hasn't called to thank me. I just know what's happening because the contractor called to thank me. But at the end of the day, I feel like I made a sale.
Yeah.
So you talk about the mindset change. I go home. My wife will say, did you sell something today? I'm like, heck yeah. What'd you sell? I got a basement. I got Tom Waller doing a basement. What's that got to do with it? So the mindset is it builds, it grows. You mentioned triathlon. You know the work that it takes, but that five-hour bike ride was something that you went on kicking and screaming, but when you got done and you've been home for an hour or two and you sat there and the endorphins are still kicking in, you're going, man, that was awesome.
But what I like about this is that it's not it's more fun, and I don't have to get up in the morning going, oh, my gosh, I got to make 100 calls. So the reason why people are loving this is I'm going to get up in the morning, and all I'm going to do, my whole marketing program today is to try to help five of my friends. And so what happens is when you start becoming the person that contacts them, then you're building the relationship even deeper than it was before. You're learning more about them, and you're helping them, and you're doing it because it's fun to help them. And they may never send you a deal, but they'll probably tell somebody else about you, and a deal will come that way. So you never really are interested in selling to your mother and your cousin and your fraternity brother. But you are interested, if they ever ask, being really clear about exactly what it is you're looking for. So I teach people to be really good at knowing how to paint your picture according to what that person is going to see. And when you get good at it, it starts becoming fun because it's just more pleasurable to wake up in the morning and call somebody and try to figure out how to help them. And then here's the other thing. Where the real power in this program is really not in the professional help, it's in the personal help. And so what a lot of people don't understand is you've got this person that you're selling to, and let's say they're the IT director at Georgia Pacific, and you're calling on this guy. Well, you might lose that deal because his job is to make sure he gets the best value for his company. And so if your price doesn't become competitive or you can't ship in time or whatever, all the other things, and somebody else slides in, they can take your place. However, if during the time you've been doing business with him, you also find out that his daughter just graduated from the University of Georgia and she's looking for a job as a school teacher, and you go back to your village of 200 and try to find her some interviews and some opportunity, that guy will never forget that. He will pay more for your product just because of what you've done for him personally. Or his wife loses her job. Or, his son has a job and he needs a customer to sell printing to, and you hook him up with somebody. Or he's trying to figure out who he needs to buy life insurance from, and you introduce him to a really nice life insurance guy. So all those personal things that you do for that guy are even more important than what you're doing for him on a professional basis. So real quick, so what happens is I teach this concept. So your village is your 200 people. So what you want to be is the mayor, the go-to guy in that group of 200, so that people start calling you for everything. I had a guy call me Saturday and wanted to know who I knew that could fix the brake system on his 1970 Cutlass. Because the guy that he had been using wasn't in business any longer, and the one guy, buddy of his, that knew about those kind of cars gave him a guy, and that guy couldn't get to it in time. And so he's calling me to ask me, Beach, you're my mayor. Do you know who can do this? And I said, no, but I know some people that might. So I hang up the phone. I say, who do I know who's got a classic car? So I call my friend Jim, who's got four or five classic cars. Jim, this is the situation. Jim says he needs to call so-and-so. Here's his phone number. This is where he's located. And tell him I told him to call, and he's the best guy in town. I call my guy back. I give him that. He's already called me back to say, oh, my gosh, this guy's awesome. He's around the corner. I never knew he existed. Thank you, Beecham. Thank you. If a speaking opportunity shows up, I got to believe he's going to throw my name in the hat.
Absolutely. So let me ask this one last question. How do you manage your village, your 200. I mean, so, you know, when the guy says, do you know anybody? And you said, no, but I know some people that might, you know, we've seen CRMs and other types of databases that are designed to help us manage all this information flow to keep up with it. Is there a strategy that you teach there, or is it just the fact that you're in frequency with people so you come to know it?
Well, it's both. But basically,
remember, the strategy is we're only really databasing people that we really know. So I just met you. I will put your name down, but I won't put you in my call list just yet. If I run into you again or have another opportunity, I want us to develop a relationship before I start bugging and calling you. So just because I met somebody and I have their business card doesn't mean they're now in my list to call every day. But if I bump into them a second time or a third time, or like the other day I was at Publix and ran into a guy I went to high school with and I hadn't seen him in 15 or 20 years, I put him in my database to call him. I have a relationship with him. I just forgot about him. So I added him in 3 months. In 3 months, I'm going to call him. And then after I talk to him, I'll go a little bit deeper, learn more about what he's doing. Then I'll figure out when I want to call him again. But somebody like you, I'll put you in my contact on Microsoft. And what I'll do is under your name, I'll figure out a category that I want to put you in so that if Dan called me, you know, and said, hey, do you know anybody that can help me with the way I'm thinking or help me with how to get my mind right or help me with coaching? I got to think of a category to put you in so that I would type that in my phone searching for it.
Is awesome a category awesome in your database?
No, I hadn't had that one yet.
Database of one.
Database of one. There
okay,
you go.
but I mean, if you worked for Coca-Cola, then I would put you in as Andy, and I would put Coca-Cola because right. Somebody will call me and say, do you know anybody at Coca-Cola? And then after that, it would say IT or HR or sales or whatever. So the key point here is I try to categorize people as to the way I'm going to search for them. It's the way that somebody else is going to say to me, do you know anybody that does so-and-so? That way that I can get to you quicker. And so that data is in my Outlook and it's in my phone. And I've got about 6,000 names in there because I collect people now. That's my goal is to collect and build relationships with as many people as I can. And then that way, whenever I'm with somebody, so like what I'll do today before I leave is I'll give you these two contacts. We'll talk about it. And if you want them, I'll give them to you now because they're already in my phone. So that keeps the momentum going. That keeps me doing it quickly.
Well, I like what you said, and I don't want to miss this point as we wrap up here today, and that's the fact that, you know, you're going to develop a relationship with this new person first.
Correct.
And that's really important because I don't think that often happens. I think that gets glossed over, too. People just immediately start, you know, how can you help me? The relationship never gets built, and the whole thing crumbles.
The magic is that people don't fall in love with you. They fall in love with how they feel when they're with you. So if you make other people feel really good, then it's the relationship happens so much faster than if you're just there talking and they're listening. And that's the pure magic of it. If I help you with something that's important to you, it's more likely that we're going to get back together than if I don't.
So Steve, for people listening and they're thinking, hey, this is a program I need to look at, I need to think about, this is a strategy I need to develop in my own business, or if something I need to roll out to my team, talk to us about contact information, resources. I'm looking at the paperback here that you got in your hand. How do people take next steps to move forward with you?
Well, they can go to www.bassackwardbassackwardbusiness.com and they can order my book and or they can do the Amazon Kindle thing. You can do Kindle and or order a book, and it's a real easy read. It would take you more than a couple of hours to read the book, and that's on purpose. You can also go to www.stevebeacham.com, and there's a couple of videos on there, a couple of things that I talk about, or you can email me at steve@hometownmoney.com, which is my mortgage company email. And I guess that's about it.
And you can call Dan for a referral, right?
Or you can call me at my cell phone, 770-634-2531. Be glad to help anybody.
Fantastic. Well, guys, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really do appreciate the information. I think you're on a key topic, and I do agree with you. I think the way that we're doing business is completely backwards sometimes, and this is a refreshing take on it. I hope those of you listening out there are able to take some of this information and put it to use in your own business. Steve, Dan, thank you guys so much for being here today.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
All right. To those of you listening, Bass Ackwards, it's the new way of doing business. So quit doing business the old way. change things, create something unique, create success in your business. And as I like to say, remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.